So I know you're going to be surprised by this, but I'm going to start with a couple of questions. And you can just answer in your heart. How many books of the Bible are named after an emotion?
The what?
There's just one. There's one. Lamentations. Emotion. Lamentations.
Okay.
Now here's my second question. Have you ever heard a sermon on the Book of Lamentations?
It's a downer.
It is a downer. It is. It is. I mean, most of us in North America, we can't get past the title of the book, can we? Lamentations. Oh my goodness. Well, it is in our lectionary, and it's in our lectionary for today. Rumor has it that Jeremiah is said to have written the five long poems that are in the book as a way of expressing grief over the people's exile from Jerusalem when they're invaded by the Babylonians in 587. There are no stories. There's no indication of any kind of kingdoms. There's no parables. There's no any of the stuff that we're used to reading in the biblical text. It's just five poems that relay what has become known as a tragic sense of life. A tragic sense of life. Now, what we have in Lamentations is universal sadness. And we have an invitation to universal solidarity. If you're familiar with the stages of grief and loss, the earliest stage is what? Anger. One of the earliest stages is anger. Why did this happen? Why did this happen to me? Why was this great person taken? Anger. And Jeremiah, his sadness and his tears in the Book of Lamentations, in those five poems, start us with kind of an evolution of anger. He is unable to sustain his rage, that's a good word, rage, at the people's collective foolishness and his sense of injustice of everything. Nothing is just, Jeremiah says, nothing. And he's even ticked off at God. Yeah. He thinks God has withdrawn God's self from the people instead of staying and protecting them from being captured and exiled. And so Jeremiah, like a lot of prophets, he invites us into sadness. His sadness, God's sadness, the sadness that we have when the reality of the world is just so tragic. And it's much more, this sadness and anger and grief is much more than outrage at a particular event. I mean, that's the beauty of Lamentations. It's about the world in general. So the language in Lamentation kind of morphs from anger, like we do when we're in grief, from anger to pity, sadness over suffering and woundedness, Yet, in these five poems, Jeremiah still holds out to the Hebrews and to us hope for relief. Hope for relief. We weep at the reality of the world. We weep together. And as we weep, that reality becomes solidarity and compassion and kindness. So, decisive and harsh judgments slip away in the tracks of our tears. The great theologian Walter Brueggemann, who died several months ago, wrote, "Christians have never much used and never much needed the Book of Lamentations." I'm going to say that again. Brueggemann says, "Christians have never much used and never much needed the Book of Lamentations." He goes on to say, "Because Christians have forever been triumphant and dominant, partly confident that the Christ is the winner, and partly privileged culturally, politically, and economically." Brueggemann goes on to say that we never used and never needed Lamentations until we considered the cross and the crucifixion and the suffering love of Christ and his call to enter the places of hurt with him. So now, as we ponder the loss of Jerusalem, ancient Jerusalem, and crucified Jesus, and God's suffering love, as we hear Paul tell Timothy, "Join me in suffering for the gospel," listen again to the old cadences of loss, grief, and pain. Bob, could you go back to Lamentations 1, 1 through 6? How lonely sits the city that once was full of people. How like a widow she has become. She that was great among nations. She that was a princess among the provinces has become subject to forced labor. The roads of Zion mourn, for no one comes to the festivals. All of her gates are desolate, her priests groan, her young girls grieve, and her lot is bitter. From daughter Zion has departed all her majesty. Her princes have become like stags that find no pasture. They fled without strength before the pursuer. There's a reason that we now have the assigned text of Lamentations that maybe we have not needed or used before, and why I'm preaching my first sermon on Lamentations today. The reason is that, like the Hebrews who saw Jerusalem devastated, we are watching the old world, the familiar world, that we have trusted and counted on vanish before our eyes. We are witnessing the demise of patterns of power and patterns of meaning that have seemed to us eternal. And there is a deep loss among us that gives way to deep anxiety that produces deep resentment, and in many quarters triggers violence and brutality. Paul writes to Timothy, "Join me in suffering for the gospel." And the poetry of Lamentations, in deep need, says wistfully, "It is nothing to you, all you who pass by. Look and see if there is any sorrow like my sorrow, which was brought upon me." Lamentations is asking, do you see? Do you notice? Do you even care? And here we are on World Communion Sunday, the good gifts of God, bread and cup, as signs of presence and generosity, are spread before us. But also spread before us is the suffering of the world, the grief of loss, the still edge of violence, the restless anxiety of need and rage, all around, distant and very close. We Christians notice both signs of God's generous presence and signs of deep need. We notice both and we embrace both because in our faith they come together. Suffering in the gospel is not masochistic or old school Lent of self-denial. It is rather acting and living and praying and sharing in the awareness that our life is one with those who suffer. And when we notice as Christ notices, we find ourselves transformed away from self-sufficiency to solidarity, away from private privilege to communal engagement, away from hard dismisses, indifference, to overflowing compassion. Paul's invitation to join in suffering isn't a bid for a specific act. It's rather an invitation to a different form of life, a different presence in the world, a mode of life that participates in the healing of the world. Now, it's an old temptation among us to think so much about the needs of the world that we get bogged down in our own depression. It's hard not to feel that way these days, because the losses and the wounds are so deep and powerful. And the needs are so great. It's just too much for our capacity. But Paul, not that he's boasting, but Paul already knows about this problem. And so he writes to Timothy. He says, "Join me in suffering for the gospel, relying on the power of God, who saved us and called us with a holy calling, not according to our works, but according to his own purpose and grace." antidote to depression is our calling in God's purpose. The ground for well-being amidst suffering is the power of God. And we gather on this Communion Sunday to testify to each other. I know we don't testify as Presbyterian Lutherans, but, you know, that's okay. But we gather today on World Communion Sunday to testify to each other that the suffering of the world all around us is in the midst of God's power from which we act freely in caring ways of solidarity. Together in grace. It is by remembering God's power in past times that we can be engaged in suffering in present time. And this is what the poet of Lamentations remembers. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. God's mercies never come to an end. They are new every single morning. And great is God's faithfulness. Here are the three greatest words in the Hebrew Scriptures, testifying to the power of God: steadfast love, mercy, and faithfulness. Israel finds God to be utterly reliable while they're in the midst of any and every loss. The church has found God to be utterly reliable in the midst of every suffering. Even now, as I speak, all around the world, there are believers who know God's steadfast love, mercy, and faithfulness that are reliable against every need they may have. So Paul writes to Timothy, relying on God's power. Not about my power, not about your power. It's about God's power that is expressed in the three great words: steadfast love, mercy, and faithfulness. For power of God is reliable. Now, it's people who don't trust God's faithfulness, who don't know God's mercy, and who have no sense of God's faithfulness, who engage in denial and can't face the loss going on around us. Now, this doesn't mean we're not going to be sad. This doesn't mean we're not going to be depressed, but we have hope because we remember. That beautiful anthem, "Remember Me." Remember me. We are called to our individual memory and to our collective memory, and our knowledge of the biblical text and how God has lived out in God's world. It is the loss of that memory that lets people fall into anxiety, restlessness, and sometimes destructiveness. But we as Christians, we baptize Christians who eat broken bread and drink of the one cup, we are different. We know about God's reliable power, steadfast love, mercy, and faithfulness. And so we don't flinch from the suffering of the world. Notice when we talk about God's power, it's not move mountains, It's not thunder in the sky. It's love, mercy, and faithfulness. And we come to that. We come to that with freedom and confidence, knowing that God entrusts to us the capacity, the willingness, the heart, and the mind to heal and transform. And so we come to this table, and there spread before us are all the hurts and the losses of the world. And there spread before us is the power of God, given as steadfast love, mercy, and faithfulness. As Paul says in 2 Timothy, the 7th verse, we have not a spirit of cowardice, but rather a spirit of power and love and self-discipline. Steadfast love, mercy, and faithfulness. God's power will see us through, will help us engage in the transformational acts that we are called to perform in God's world. And we will find solidarity with each other. Thanks be to God. Amen.